Hello and welcome to The Good, The Bad and The Curious. I'm Dr. Alex Marsh and today I'm joined by
Dr. Alan Mullen
and Connor Hamill.
And today we're going to be discussing life as a tech optimist. What does the future hold? Now, just to pick apart this question slightly, are we tech optimists?
Yes, so, yeah, very much so. I'd say I most definitely am a tech optimist, although I do sometimes have a crisis of faith in general. Quite positive about everything.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would consider myself as a techno-optimist as well, because I think that anybody involved in research or science, you have a belief in that you're trying to improve things for everybody eventually, even though it may take some time to get there.
And I guess we would define tech optimist as someone who's positive about the impact technology will have on the future. Is that a fair definition?
I think so, yeah, definitely. You know, it's not someone who is kind of disillusioned that everything's going to be perfect, but it's someone who wants to see the future as bright as possible and thinks that technology is capable of reaching that future.
And I think the technology we're going to be discussing in this episode is primarily artificial intelligence, automation, robotics, and potentially some other branch off topics that might come up during the discussion. Why is the media afraid of certain things like AI and automation and robotics and things like that?
Well, you only have to look at some of the Hollywood films to see some of these scenarios that, you know, that we would be maybe forewarned about. So I think those are a good thing for us to, you know, that capture a lot of things that we would be concerned about. But I think that we would be worried about, you know, our role as humans on the planet. And you know, if you have other things that are more intelligent, faster, more capable, where does that place us? And how would AI, whether it's in a single entity or a range of other ones, where does that place us, and where do they place us as well?
You mean in terms of humanity's position and the technology position in terms of the new social hierarchy, I suppose?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess maybe let's flip this on its head. What benefits could we see technology bringing to the world? Bear in mind, none of us are experts here. We're just going on what we've read about and what we know about and having a discussion on it.
Yeah, so I mean, you could split this into, you know, different things. So if you're looking at like technology pieces, so one really cool one came up recently was solar glass. So, you know, if you imagine transparent glass that lets a certain amount of light through but is able to create photovoltaic energy. Yeah, we've touched on artificial intelligence as well, and you look at some of the applications for that, you know, for instance in agriculture, you know, using that to maximize yields and reduce the carbon footprint of food production. Other things like, you know, tracking our planet as well and optimizing, say, you know, the forest plantations for carbon sequestration, things like that. Then, you know, other big technologies like energy and nuclear fusion. Mm-hmm. You know, the amazing benefits that would offer us as a clean energy source.
So what is the thing that you're most excited about to see in the future?
Probably what I'm most excited about is just a continuation of, you know, a lot of the big global health trends that you see in the world. Hans Rosling, who you may be familiar with, he wrote a fantastic book called Factfulness, and he kind of paints a picture of global health that, you know, a lot of people like don't really understand, you know, that it's actually not as bad as what, you know, the media portrays, and we're very good at jumping on headlines that, you know, maybe of a plane crash or someone dying. And it's not to say that those incidents or, you know, are shouldn't be reduced. You know, that's totally not the picture. But it's, you know, that. So to give you some facts, for example, you know, the average life expectancy at the moment is 72 years. 50 years ago, that was 55. casualties due to natural disasters have halved in the past 100 years. 80% of the planet has access to electricity. 80% of 1-year-olds have been vaccinated, and 86% of adults are literate. So though, you know, just a continuation of these global health trends, that's what I'm most excited about.
And you would say that the figures you just talked about were primarily due to advances in technology, education, science, that kind of thing?
So I think for sure there are a lot of other things that play a role in all these trends that, and the statistics that I've just highlighted, and technology is definitely one of them. Like, take the literacy statistic, you know, and you look at the adoption of the internet across the world, and you know, people's access to information has and resources has definitely contributed to that.
I mean, accessing information has definitely changed the face of doing research in the last 50 years, because now you can look up papers on things like Google Scholar instead of having to, you know, look things up in the library.
Yeah, it used to be whenever I would have been doing things originally in research, I would have had to go into the science library and spend a lot of time in there looking through things, which took quite a long time, whereas now we have Google Scholar and other tools at our fingertips, and we can view a wide range of science across multiple disciplines. And whether we're working in one specific area or not, it means that we can pull advances within one area and use those developments and tools within the area that we're looking at, and that can speed up then the development within whatever area that we're looking at. It makes it much easier to access information. And then also we've talked before in other podcasts about verifying information sources as well. I think, you know, that we're in a much better place now than we would have been previously.
So just as the same question to you, is there anything you're really excited about in the future?
Well, the ones that Connor mentioned about the health benefits for us, that's a really big one. But the other one would be about things to do with making best use of our resources on the planet, because we know that we're constricted in those ways. So it would be about clean energy. And it would be about making use of resources in a way that protects the planet and other things. That means that we can do, you know, sort of remediative kind of things to take back the damage that we have done and restore places to what they should be. So that we have a much healthier environment, whether that's within the marine environments and fish and other ecosystems within there, or whether it's in rainforests or wherever it happens to be. I think that would be things I would be particularly interested in.
So you mean potentially cleaning up things like plastic in the ocean, that kind of thing?
Yeah, plastic in the ocean, chemicals that have leached into the ground. There's so many different areas where we have damaged the planet through, you know, really just through the development, and, you know, over the, how many years has it been, you know, that we've, you know, you can see the graphs of, you know, population increases, and we've the population explosion that we've had and the impact that has had on the planet. So it's, you know, we need to address that now. So there, you know, people are obviously working on that, but it would be really nice to see some of these advances in those areas.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm excited about are swarm robots, which I really wanted to mention in this particular podcast. So a swarm robot is a small robot, probably less than 10 centimetres in size, and you can have between 10 to 1,000 of them, maybe even more than that, and they can all communicate with one another in order to be able to perform complex processes. I've spoken with someone who's actually been researching using swarm robots to rescue people from burning buildings, but they also potentially have use in things like space exploration and, you know, maybe even monitoring near-Earth objects, and also if you think about repairing a spaceship, they could be used for something like that. Which is obviously all tasks that humans really can't be doing or shouldn't be doing, or it's not safe for humans to be doing. So I guess that plays into the, you know, we're reducing loss of life by employing technology, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, you're quite clearly a tech optimist as well. So But yeah, you know, like an application for robotics, and you've seen that, you know, in industrial automation, you know, using robotics to replace repetitive, mundane tasks, you know, that, you know, people are have this fantastic mind. Why not use it, you know, to do something that fulfills you, you know, repetitive, mundane tasks, you know, aren't fulfilling in that sense. So, you know, let the robots do that. And also, like, the working environments that are dangerous to human life as well.
Yeah, so I think that was one of the questions there about why are we afraid of AI and automation and robotics, and if we have a lot of jobs within those kind of areas and then we're replacing them, there's a short-term impact, but you would hope that in the future that you would be able to have different jobs and roles for people in a different way and make a more productive use of their abilities.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Martin Ford, who's a software entrepreneur in Silicon Valley, wrote a book called Rise of the Robots, and although I kind of disagree with the title, the book is very informative in talking about automation and the effect that'll have on jobs, and it is a real problem. It's something that, again, he says will require unprecedented economic policy, and, you know, the more and more jobs are being replaced by automation as, you know, machines get smarter, with things like machine learning is able to replace not just, you know, low skill jobs, but higher skill jobs in across different sectors. And, you know, if you look at the job market as a pyramid, you know, with lower skill at the bottom of the pyramid, you know, as you move up the pyramid, there's less opportunities for you know, those people at the bottom of the pyramid to upskill, you know, because there's less requirement for those jobs. So it is a real problem that we'll face in the future.
Say, for example, you are responsible for scheduling. One part of your job is scheduling stuff, and then a piece of software comes out that uses machine learning that can make that part of your job much simpler and much easier, which means you have much more time to focus on the other parts of your job that can't be automated.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that quite a lot of roles actually would benefit from something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it means that you're more productive in the areas that couldn't be made more efficient by technology.
Yeah,
well, we see that in our everyday lives, working on our, say, if you're working on your computer, there's the developments in the different applications that you use, whether you're working in spreadsheets or other design software, for example. There's so many tools in those that allow you to do things so much more quickly that you can have more time to be creative, think about different ways of doing stuff rather than working with the tools and fighting and battling with the tools.
And doing things very repetitively.
Yeah.
And one of the things I guess we've seen in our lifetime is the change in supermarkets where...
Yeah, I think that's a thing people have... Even on social media, they've posted up pictures of saying how shocking this is that there's nobody in the checkout areas. Of course, as we know, whenever you go to those automated checkout things, you still do need somebody to come out, and that seems whether they're, you know, you've got a red light showing that something's gone wrong or the till's broken. So it looks like there's not too many people there, but then you would question, really, as Connor pointed out earlier, is that an effective use of people's time doing something which would be quite a repetitive task, lifting an object, scanning it, or even in the past having to type in the price of it and then placing it in another area? That sounds like something that is good for automation to me. Yeah, so you hope then that there's other roles behind the scenes and that people would be doing instead.
Yeah. Also the benefit that if you're buying something you're maybe embarrassed about, you don't have to you don't have to show it to a cashier, you can quickly sneak through without anyone knowing.
Yeah. But those are normally the things that flag up with the red light anyway.
Yeah.
That's exactly
so it makes it worse because everybody else has to look around to see what it is.
Yeah.
So what do we think the future does hold?
So, well, for that, I think I would want to call upon a gentleman called Ray Kurzweil, who is kind of a serial inventor. He's been called the heir of Edison, and he's one of the most accurate predictors of technological developments. Like he's predicted things like, you know, the computer would beat the world champion chess player by the year 2000, which actually occurred in 1997. And, you know, he predicted the rise of internet use, wireless internet as well, before it was mainstream. So some of his predictions for 2029, he predicts that, you know, a $1,000 computer will be as powerful as a human mind, and that human-driven cars will be illegal.
By 2029?
By 2029, yeah. So,
it's fabulously close, isn't it?
Yeah, so bear in mind, this guy's an 80% track record, so you wouldn't bet against him. So
some people will probably still be paying off their cars at that stage, so they would be quite annoyed about that.
Yeah, so they are, you know, I'm sure there are opportunities in that, you know, say, for example, the government, you know, incentivizes people, you know, to upgrade their existing car to autonomous technology. You know, like now you can do it for $1,000, as a hacker called George Holtz demonstrated. So in imagine 10 years time how easy it would be to upgrade.
So you can change your car to an autonomous car for $1,000, is that right?
Yeah.
Really? Is that in the US?
Yes, that was a guy called George Holtz. So you can look him up. He's a hacker, and he hacked his own car for $1,000.
He did it to his own car.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
and the with like autonomous lorries and things like that, they are already being tested, trialed in the US.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. The autonomous technologies are already quite mainstream. Like companies like Tesla.
Yeah.
You know. And then to continue then with. So 2045 is where Kurzweil kind of talks about the singularity, which is the technological singularity people might be familiar with, you know, singularity of a black hole, you know, the physics. And after that, it's kind of anything goes, you know, but that's where our artificial superintelligence is created, so it's more powerful than all of mankind. And he goes on to talk about, so in 2099, things like, you know, machines will be given legal status and organic humans will be a small minority. And, you know, as a result of again, you know, the technological development, like there'll be planet-sized computers where we can make dead material conscious. And from that, the universe comes to life.
It does feel like we're very, very strong into science fiction with this.
And it sounds quite close as well.
Yeah, well, when you know, underpinning all this is exponential growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like our mothers and fathers' generation was pretty similar to the last generation and generation before that. But you look at, you know, I can't even imagine what, you know, my children in the future, their generation will look like. And that's underpinned by this exponential growth. So, you know, don't rule anything out.
I don't know. When I think about my childhood living through the tape deck and then the CD player and then the MP3 player and then the iPod, I guess we are moving quite quickly, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I would like to see happen would be more along the lines of the space exploration side of things, about going to whether that's the moon, Mars, further afield, setting up colonies there, and so on, which has been played out, of course, in many, many films, which we seem to keep going back to. But then the other one, I think, then is, you know, human augmentation of kind of working in hand with the AI, about whether that's for vision, like heads-up display within, you know, like the Google glasses, remember those a while ago?
Yeah.
I know there's a few issues with that, but the basic concept, I think, is something that we'll see.
Okay then, well thank you very much for joining me today, and I think that's all we've got time for.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Andor Technology Podcast. Andor is an Oxford Instruments business, specializing in the design and manufacture of market-leading imaging and spectroscopy solutions for the scientific research market. For more information on our products and services, please visit andor.com.